here, so if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Jax. After a while, she's Jay-Z back on the board. After being off for the 4th of July week, we missed you, Jay-Z.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure our fans missed you, but Jack did a nice job yesterday. And Matty Weber's, well, he's Matty Weber. He's the best. S&P futures up 6.25, NASDAQ futures up 17, Dow futures up 79, trying to move further into record territory, at least on the Dow side today. We'll see if that happens. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Welcome to Friday. They're always good.
What's the good word?
The good word or the secret word? Say the secret word. You get $50.
Secret word is always better than the good word.
Yes.
How many
people are old enough to know that that's from Groucho Marx's "You Bet Your Life"?
Oh yeah,
quiz show.
Yeah, the guy. He was certainly an innovator in a lot of ways. I mean, had some interesting lines, that's for sure. What was it? I would never join a club that would have me. Is that him?
That it would have me as a member. Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
Wouldn't want to belong to a club that has me as a member.
There's a lot to be said for that sometimes, I think. We got sort of record highs in the market here. We got the Fed seemingly going to drop, I'm going to say 0.25%, seeing as the CPI number came out yesterday a little hot.
Well, that's going to have big impact, I'm sure.
It's...
somewhere between big and... yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, what it means is that they've got everybody's back, that they'll put more money in. The market ever goes down, so the people feel more comfortable in essentially assets, and that's what this thing is all been about. I mean, it's not like I'm not going to accuse anybody after the 2008 or 9 fiasco. I'm not going to accuse anybody of not wanting the rest of society to do well, but when you have a crack in asset prices, I mean, what do you do? You figure out a way to prop back up, right? I mean, it really doesn't have anything to do with, those are the people who run the country, and all of a sudden it's not in a bad way. I mean, there's always going to be people that have more assets than other people, but, that's what they do. I mean, if you are a Jay Pritzker, you're not working for a living. You have stuff that's worth stuff. And the idea is to have your stuff be worth more every year, right? There's somewhat of a different, I won't say it's different because a lot of regular people have obviously 401ks and so forth, so that stuff means something to them as well. But it's not the same level. Sometimes they can be two separate things. Not going to go into it too heavy, but when you look at a capital asset pricing model, which again it's already probably too heavy, with the for instance. If you are looking for a 10% return and a building returns $100,000 a year, it's easy. You'll pay $1 million for it, right, Kevin? If it's,
at least.
Yeah, if you're looking for a 5% return and a thing is returning $100,000 a year, you're going to pay, $2 million for it, right? Now, the problem comes is when you get to the point where you're on the edge of the curve or the curve, whatever you want to call it, interest rates are worth or 1% or a 0.5% where you can get somewhere else. Now you start substituting. Well, I'll buy a risky stock that pays a 3% dividend because I can't get 3% in a bank or 2.5% risk free. So I'll buy a stock for whatever. So in theory, the same house or apartment building I was talking about, if you're looking for a 0.05, or 0.5% interest, I mean, what's the place worth? $20 million? $100 million? I mean, there comes a, a, there comes a spot there where you say, I don't care what the interest rate is, I'm not paying $50 million for this place. So it ends up having everything, in a lot of ways, very mispriced. Now, if everything works out properly, like we hoped that this would be in 2007, 2008, 2009, I think most people, especially people who had as many years on earth as me, you would say, okay, you're going to cut back very gradually as the world improves. So partially, you're going to be knocking down the price of that building or whatever it is, stock, or they're all the same, buying. We're knocking down the price of that asset. But on the other side, the economy is going to be humming. So the $100,000 of income that was flowing your way in 2009 is now going to be $150,000. So instead of the place dropping from, $3 million to $1 million, it may only drop from $3 to $2.5 million, and you're doing pretty good. So, the increase in the income is going to somehow match over time your gradual get back to normalcy on the interest rate parts. Because nobody's ever going to price a building. I won't say nobody, because people sort of are. We're probably never going to price it at 1%, but you probably... There are people that are pricing stuff at, 2.5, 3, certainly are doing that with stocks, and that can be very dangerous, because someday people are going to say, I'm not giving people money for 2%, the hell with that. And interest rates, everybody in this generation is absolutely convinced that the Fed controls interest rates. And in the short term, in the short run, on a day-to-day basis, they can control the Fed funds rate. But if all of a sudden inflation breaks out, and all of a sudden one day somebody says, or it breaks out more than it has, or general inflation, let's put it that way. One day somebody says, Kevin, I'm not giving you $100 for the year for you to use, and you only give me $102 back. I want $108 back. Because guess what? In my mind, dumb as I may be, that $100 a year from now is not worth $100. I want 6% more just on the inflation number, plus the 2.5% I want to charge you for using my money. By the way, that equals 8.5%. So, and the Fed can't deal with that. They're just gonna, that's between you and me. That's between everybody else. The Fed can't stop that. They can't tell somebody you gotta be stupid and lend somebody money and get back stuff that's worth less. I mean, what do you think if you want to go to an extreme stupid discussion, what do you suppose the GDP, the nominal GDP is in Venezuela or what it was in the Weimar Republic in Germany? I mean, when the price of bread was going up during the day, at the end of the day, in nominal terms, means in terms of money spent, I'm going to guess the GDP was off the chart, right, Kevin? But it didn't do anybody any good, did it?
Probably not.
No. So
it always does somebody some good.
There's always somebody somewhere. I mean, there's millionaires made in depressions, for God's sake. I mean, we know that. But so I was reading this morning that. Two interesting creatures, shall we say, in the world. AOC and Trump agree on the Fed.
Okay, let's pass some bills. Let's pass some legislation, yeah. Then.
What do you think, if I could somehow referee the thing, if I had the two of them on the show criticizing the Fed, what do you suppose their knowledge of monetary policy and the history of it and the history of the Feds themselves, what do you suppose that knowledge is?
I'm just trying to come up with a good estimate.
Well, let's say, what level of education do you suppose that is? Sophomore economics? Doctorate economics?
Yeah, probably. Both of them went to really good schools.
Yeah.
For whatever that's worth.
Yeah, what would you do... Without one, how else would you do it? You'd have the president control the money supply. So you'd actually have a constitution that says, if the president or Congress wanted to spend money, they just printed it and spent it. That would be interesting.
Works for me. How about for you?
It would work for me. Yeah,
that's how I want to do it. So,
well, I mean, it would be nice for you and me, but it's pretty rough for a country to do that. You think? I mean, if you're the one guy with the printing press. It's a great idea. If everybody had one, I'm not so sure it works out so good. What do you think?
I would guess not.
Just saying.
So, yeah. So speaking of AOC and some of her cohort, what do you think of this little battle with Speaker Pelosi?
You knew that was coming.
Yeah, I'm sitting here. I'll tweet this out. I'm sitting here backing up a couple of months to the, you know, the smiling group of them, Pelosi and the newly elected youngsters, on the cover of Rolling Stone. Those were the days, my friend.
Oh yeah.
But I don't think I've ever seen Nancy Pelosi back on her heels as frequently as she has been lately. You know, it doesn't mean she doesn't come back with a counterpunch, because she does. But she's been getting knocked off her game a little bit here, and of course what we've known with her as the speaker is, well, and even as the minority leader, is she runs her caucus with kind of an iron fist, and that ain't working right now.
It's not, and it, I'm going to say it actually is fairly similar to when all the Tea Party people won in the Republican Party.
It is. It's similar to that, and it's similar to the Republicans the first year of Donald Trump, when they didn't know if they were going to, you know, get on board with the program or if they were going to fight it.
Well, I think it's fair to say, whether or not, unlike Newt Gingrich, the late justice who somehow knew what all the founding fathers were thinking, I don't think I do, but. Obviously, whenever you have a body of 435 people that turns over every 2 years, the design is somewhat contentious, right? I mean, it's sort of built that way. And I think there's always going to be a, not so much in the Senate, but, you know, I don't know that the founding fathers ever envisioned a two-party system, or whatever they envisioned in terms of who actually would end up running the place. And all they knew is that.
Yes and no. They had a two-party system early on, didn't they?
I'm not sure. I think they had more than two. But I mean, they also knew that as long as they had George Washington as president, they were okay. You know, right? So I mean, you know, I'm saying I don't know how far they thought about it, but there's always going to be so the message, shall we say, at least some people's idea of the message that they bring forth in their community, like an AOC. Is probably not ready for prime time. I mean, her, and I think actually as she matures, although she would say she's probably as mature as anybody in the world right now, she isn't at that age. I'm sorry, nobody is. I mean, as she matures, she probably will realize that that politics and her looks that made her run through that district, and the fact that she's a bright girl, and no doubt about that, that right now that does not play on a national stage. I mean, and Pelosi is more like the center. I mean, she's worried more about the party winning the Senate and winning the presidency and getting the Democratic message, wherever that is, across in a way that it appeals to an awful lot of people and that they win. And AOC is still, I mean, she doesn't, it's her way or the highway right now, it appears.
Well, she's an ideologue. And it isn't just her.
It's not just her.
It's Representative Omar. It's Representative Tlaib.
Yeah,
they're pretty hard line about what it is they want to do, but the thing that's so unusual, I guess there were some people outspoken in the Tea Party days as well. I don't remember it being a back and forth like this as public.
Well,
there was disagreement and there was a lot of simmering below the surface, but. You know, they're just lobbing bombs at
each other. I don't think it was possible. I mean, when you remember the guy who got himself in front of the face of the world back in the day was Newt Gingrich. And how did he do it? He had to stand in front and make speeches in the House when literally nobody else was in the place. And the few people that have, I won't say zero to do, people that have the time, that was a Freudian shot, wasn't it? To watch C-SPAN. Listen to this guy give some pretty good speeches and said, "Who the hell is this guy? He's pretty bright."
They also had their agenda, their contract with America.
Right, but I'm saying
as a political tool, that was very effective because they could just say, you know, refer to the list. Right now, what's the list? I guess it's the Green New Deal is the one side's list. I have no idea. From the Pelosi side, what would constitute the list?
But without making a sexual shot this morning, in 5 years,
which is usually what someone says
when they're about to do it,
take one.
In 5 years, one of the most attractive and brightest young ladies I've met in a long time is producing the show this morning. So if Jay-Z wanted to get her a law degree, or maybe not even get one, and all of a sudden start firing out and saying stuff that's somewhat controversial, makes a little bit of sense, and she would be in front, and she'd be on every magazine cover tomorrow. I wouldn't be, knew you wouldn't be. I mean, if you use the social media properly and you have something to say, and oh, by the way, you're physically attractive, you're going to get places in this world. I mean, that's just the truth right now. And the more bizarre you can be, but I would say that my problem with AOC is very similar to my problem with Donald Trump. I don't think she is, I'm not going to say she's not capable. She probably is, and I'm not going to say he's not capable. He probably is. They would have no more incentive in the world than they would to put their head in a vice than actually write a 30-page paper about how something they're talking about would work and how who would pay for it and where the money came from or whatever. They're not capable. They don't care. They don't give a crap. And to me, where, you know, all I could hear was Milton Friedman and those guys saying it. This analysis is not rigorous enough. I don't even want to hear it because none of it adds up. So that was my upbringing, and it's clearly not theirs. Just saying.
Yeah, well, you're right. Although, there was a lot in the Green New Deal. It's just when it started to get picked apart as how unrealistic.
Well, so, yeah.
I guess that goes back to the not rigorous. As soon as it did, it said, well, we were speaking metaphorically.
Kevin, every one of these ideas, 99% of them, falls apart with the one question, how are you going to pay for it? Correct?
Well, that would be one of the questions, but some of the others fall apart with why.
Yeah.
That's another one that where things fall apart. So, and I'll give you an example on that is the, because you and Lou talked some educational stuff, and, part of that is how we may have discounted certain kinds of work, and in so doing is we have taken people who would otherwise have pathways into middle-class jobs and said, well, we don't value those jobs anymore. So instead they stay poor. But when you say, if I tell you that, only 60% of the jobs that we expect to create in this country over the next, I don't know, pick a number of years, 10 years, 20 years, are going to require a post-secondary credential, and only half of those the credential for only half of those would be a four-year degree, then if I'm going to come back and ask why, I'm going to say, you want to pay for college for everybody. If you want to give free college to everybody, everybody's going to go. They're going to take the free stuff. So why are you going to encourage people to pursue credentials they don't need and won't use and won't be able to use, and ask us all to pay for that? So, you're right, Tom. Part of that is how you're going to pay for it, but part of it is, come on, guys, think this through.
Yeah,
some things sound nice, but they're not, but they make no sense.
I'm going to, that's why I love having you on. We think the same way, but we think differently. I've always been, maybe it's the fact that I spent too many years in an economics class, virtually all the stuff you're talking about, to me, is because it is mispriced. There's no reason why we can't have a welder with a bachelor's degree in arts if the guy likes arts, except for the fact that it's 70 friggin' grand to get it. If it was 15, nobody would bitch.
Okay, but if you're a bachelor with a welder's degree and you want to study the arts because you like it...
Yeah.
Why would public policy be to make that free?
What I'm saying is...
We're talking hobby now.
I'm saying if everything was... No, intelligence is not a hobby. Understanding listening to me on the show, it causes somebody to maybe go buy an economics book for the first time and read through it and say this stuff is pretty neat. I don't know if that's a hobby, Kevin.
Let me put it another way. Let's just say, my kids love to... love to go to ball games, and that's their interest. They're avid baseball fans, they're avid sports fans in general. That's what they love to do, and that's the interest they want to pursue. Should we pay for that? Because we're saying somebody else's kids would like to pursue an interest in the arts, even though they're never going to work in that field.
Why should I pay for that then? If we don't screw things up, and we don't make little monopolies here and there, and if things are priced properly, people should be able to do whatever they want and pay for it themselves.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. So, I mean...
Okay, so we're dealing with two problems, and the solution to the two problems is make college free?
No, that makes no sense. What I said, I don't know, it wasn't yesterday with Lewis, somebody was on, and I was in kind of a rant, Kevin. I said, I don't use the term, the idiots up on the stage talking about medical care, same thing. The idiots up on the stage trying to figure out who's going to pay for other stuff and trying to find people you don't like and taxing them to pay for this crap, even though the numbers don't add up, is a fool's errand. There's no way on earth you can fight about who's going to pay for a $6,000 MRI when the number should be $700. If it's $700, it's not a problem anywhere, because then everybody can pay for it. They pay for it themselves. They can pay for it with any kind of a normal insurance policy. If it's $6,000, guess what, Kevin? It's just too high. Nobody can pay for it. Same way with college. If Notre Dame was $15,000 and somebody were to say, I guess I almost don't care. If you raise people's taxes to the point where everybody can go to a school that costs the government $15,000, it wouldn't be my choice in how to do it. But it also wouldn't hurt anybody either. But if you start talking about everybody has a right to go somewhere with $70,000 with health clubs and damn near at the place and the best food on earth at night and a dorm that looks like a hotel, hey, wait a minute, I'm not paying for that. What am I, some kind of moron? I mean, so it always comes down for cost. I mean, I'm sure when you were born, when I was born, the hospital bill, my dad was a policeman. It probably was a couple of $100. It meant it wasn't a great month for him, but it wasn't something he had to mortgage the house for either. Right? I'm sure you were the same way. Okay, now what's it cost to have a baby? 30? For 2 days? The numbers are so up there, and then the people who I think have less intelligence, that doesn't mean that they don't have a skill set way better than mine, they try and find ways for other people to pay it. You can't get there. I think we're agreeing on the same thing from different directions.
Well, we are, and again, that's another good why, is... Yeah. You know, why does anybody think that we have a lousy system and the solution is more of it and get the government involved?
Well, but Kevin, I'll ask you a very personal question. It's not so personal. It's not like, we want a picture of you naked or anything. Do you think at the price we paid, if you would have gone on in life to remodel houses and own 50 buildings here in Chicago, do you think that your Notre Dame education was a waste? I'm going to say no. At the price we paid?
I would say no. Although I did have an awfully good time, too.
Yes, well, that was okay for $3,500 a year. It's not okay for $70, right?
Yes. Fortunately, fortunately in the dorms I had, the likes of you as my... As our RA to keep us in order.
Yeah, how did that work out?
Not very well.
I'll tell you what, I did a better job than most could have.
Yeah, you probably did, because we at least didn't want to make you look as bad as we could have made you look.
Well, I also was able to insulate with my personality. I insulated you from the other guys.
That's true.
Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement.
Kevin's group had a party one day. The RA came up and was from the downstairs was out, and I was outraged. He said, "Get back down to the basement where you belong. This is my floor." I'm not so sure that's what you're supposed to say. As we viewed, you're still up six. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Mount. She's Jay-Z on the board. Jessica Zalewski is Mr. Kevin O'Neill of Michiana calling in. SP Futures up 475. Are you a professor now or no?
Oh, of course.
Well, then we got a two professor day. We got Ewan and Russell calling in. SP Futures up 475. NASDAQ Futures up 1275. We're up, but not as much as we were earlier. Dow still up 77. Big movers in the Dow. We got Goldman Sachs up a buck. Not really anything other than that because everything is up. Everything's up like a few cents. I don't see anything down in stuff that's trading pre-market. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 2. Let's call that flat. Those guys are in the summer doldrums over there. Not much going on. FTSE up 14.2%. Friday in Europe, everybody wants to dash. Pretty good. They're big on holidays more than we are here. CAC up 28.5%. They're actually moving over in France. I don't know if that has anything to do with that new tax on whatever big businesses or something. Maybe Kevin could tell us more about that. Nikkei up 42. 0.2%, Shanghai up 12.4%, Hang Seng up 39.1%. So slow to the upside in Asia as well. I have a feeling it's going to be a snorer of a day, but maybe not. Oil up a dime, $60, 60.30. Ran up 23 cents, 66.75, so still creeping up on that. RBOB gas, 198, it's back under $2 by just a little bit. We got gold up $4, 14.10, so it was up a bunch yesterday to 14.16, then cracked during the day, now it's back up to 14.10. So we have it up every morning, and then it goes down during the day, so it can be up again the next morning. Silver up a penny, 15.16. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:35. Chicago, we are sunny today with a high of 84, low of 65. Phoenix is cloudy with a high of 111 and a low of 88. In baseball, the Cubs, Sox, and Diamondbacks were off. Picked back up again today. And there is nothing to report in chat. Back to you.
Well, Jay-Z, what do you think of some guys that picked rooms over the chapel, that's the name, Chapel Wing, and decided to have a band with drums and everything? And really didn't care if mass was going on until I brokered a deal that they would only play when there was no mass going on. Interesting group, would you say?
Absolutely.
I remember that.
Not like the music was good either.
No, God no. But Dave hit the drums hard.
But it was loud.
Yes, it was loud. And I remember the confrontation for the guy downstairs. I think the final line was, The guy said, these guys are idiots. And I said, they're idiots, but they're my idiots. Now go on back downstairs, please, or something along those lines. I don't know. Is that negotiation or what is that, Kevin? I don't know.
Yeah, that is negotiation. And yeah, we just moved the party to the next room and carried on and let them get their midnight mass done.
See, Kevin, I'm one of these guys that,
It kind of backfired though when you think about it, because if the band was playing, they weren't drinking.
That's true.
And when they were not playing, they were drinking.
Yes. Yes, it was.
So, either way, there was going to be carnage.
Well, and especially if we, that many times do you have the inn with the wholesale keg seller in town, or you could never do that now.
Yep, you certainly cannot.
Anyway, so, the thing that, I've always been, it's probably because of my mom, Kevin. She never got a chance to go to college, and obviously she was valedictorian or high school, Inglewood High School of all places. And she loved education. The whole family, when I graduated, you remember, they all came down, for God's sake. Aunts and uncles. And, mm-hmm. and the idea that somebody had a chance, because other people couldn't, they had to work, had a chance to go to college. And my mom, I'm going to say 2 years before she died, was still taking courses. At St. Xavier's, they had an adult program. Well, she'd pay a couple hundred hours a course and go get South American history, for God's sake, simply because she wanted to learn whatever it was to learn, she wanted to learn it. And now, as long as that course is a couple hundred bucks, I don't think somebody else should pay for it. But if it's $5,000, why is it $5,000 for some guy to come in and teach 20 old ladies?
That's the right question, Tom, but either way, I don't think somebody should pay for it. Just because it's expensive doesn't mean someone should pay for it either.
But if it's the right price, and if it's priced properly, somebody should be able to go get their own loan, not from a school, and pay for it. Or find a way to work and go take a few less hours. If it's a reasonable price, you can get there by yourself. I think.
I agree.
And if it's not, identifying Wall Street to pay for it or black people to pay for it or white people, that to me, when I hear somebody say that, I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican, I just cringe. The guy gets out of the limousine and says, let's tax downtown parking. Well, that's interesting. You don't seem like you ever have to park. Well, of course. If I did, I wouldn't want that tax. I mean, I see so much of that. I'm just so disgusted about it. Whatever, Kevin.
Next bumper music. Let's go with Taxman.
Yeah. And the idea for a guy who's loved to gamble his whole life, I mean, for God's sake, my family did nothing, but every Sunday there was a big poker game. And I probably learned, I bet, Kevin, I was a halfway decent poker game player at age 6. That's all we did. Yeah, and I love to gamble. Yet the idea that you're going to drop gambling on the population when you're stealing half the dough, like the lottery takes 45% or something, and people who don't even read the damn thing and know that's what they're, Kevin, is every bit as much of a tax for people who can't pay it as a property tax, in my mind. That's not gambling. That's not fun. that's selling people hope.
No, it's hope. You're right. That's all it is.
I mean, going to the track,
and it's almost desperation more than hope.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, going to the track, taking a day or on a Saturday afternoon or whatever, going at night, buying your racing form, sitting there and saying, I know the state's going to take 15% or 14.5% or whatever they take. I'm going to bring a couple hundred bucks. There's 10 races. I'm going to bet $20 on a race. Even I hopefully can't lose all 10, but maybe I could.
I have confidence.
Yeah, even if I did, you know, a couple of beers, it's not the end of the world, but I don't feel I'm good enough with this. I'm not bringing $2,000. I'll bring a couple, you know, $20 a race is fine. And I'm happy. And you know what? I'm actually, you know, ego that I have. If I dive through the form and all this other stuff, maybe I can study a little more than the next guy, and I might be able to win a couple of them. But still, I'm not good at it. I mean, it's not like I know anything about horses other than you can bet on them. Now, Audrey, on the other hand, loves horses, but he actually wants to, like, take care of them and clean out stalls and stuff. Ew. That wouldn't be me. But for the whole world, in 15%, to me, Kevin, is fair. 45%, that's not fair. You know, I don't think.
Well, yeah, I agree with you.
Anyway,
I agree. But we, you know, we have elected representatives, and it is predominant on both sides of the aisle who think that's their job.
Yep.
And, we get the same thing on healthcare. They think that, you know, they really believe in this, we need to make sure everybody has, you know, insurance, and we'll tell everybody what has to be in their insurance policies. And what's crazy about that is that we have things that are emerging, partly as a result of that kind of legislation, that are way better alternatives. You know, I was digging around for direct primary care. I don't know what triggered it, but I was looking, you know, just to see what the Chicago area looked like. There's lots of direct primary care providers that will let you go on a subscription in the Chicago area nowadays. You know, that's emerging. It's a fixed cost, and then you only have to buy, you know, a major medical policy to cover large surgeries with the big deductible, which we're getting a big deductible anyway for our routine policies. And those were made more accessible to everybody when the tax bill passed at the end of 2017, and so now instead of encouraging people to look at alternative models that might work for them, we have government bickering over what the fix to the existing system is, so that we can trim around the edges on a really, really bad system. This is just nonsense, but they, you know, there's this belief that it's government's role to do that. And, you know, I would be much more comfortable with government doing some educational activities.
Well, Kevin, you might actually, well, quick story. In Notre Dame, they were smart enough, or I don't know if I'm going to call it smart enough, but when you remember how finals week came and they spread the finals all over the place? So if you had three classes in a row on Monday morning, the one final might be Monday morning, the second one Tuesday night, and the third one Thursday morning. They didn't try and hit you up to like three in a row, right? With the University of Chicago, that was above their pay grade. If you had three classes in a row, you took three finals in a row, which is pretty tough.
I had the same thing. I took, you know, four finals on the last weekend in grad school.
Yeah, well, they,
you know, and it would be Fridays and Saturdays, and some, and you know what? If I was done on Friday, all the better.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, but there was something in marketing called the wheel of retailing, and it's a business cycle type of thing, and it's kind of a little bit of a long story, but I'll start it. It's a business cycle kind of thing to where you, when you have a say a company, I mean, well, I'll use a name from the past, a discount company like Steinberg Baum was one of the original ones, or maybe even Marshall Fields way back, where you just show up cheap prices. You know, stuff's laying on the floor, no racks, no nothing. All of a sudden, the group gets together and say, well, I want a delivery, or what if I want to take stuff back, you know, which nobody used to. And then, well, we'll take the stuff back. Well, there's a cost to that. And all of a sudden, there's a nice rack, and maybe there's a restaurant in the place, and all of a sudden, it's pleasant to shop there. Well, if somebody comes in the next day and undercuts down the block and says, okay, Kevin's charging, you know, $5 for that shirt. If I go back to just piling the crap on the floor, I can charge $4. And it's called the wheel of retailing. People move up, they provide more services, than somebody comes around and undercuts them. Because the first place, if you leave them to their own devices, now the place looks sweet, and you know, and there's stuff all over the place, and you know, all of a sudden, what happens is, I'm going to have to finish this after the break, what happens is, their cost really does become $5. Right, if they add everything in, their full cost really is $5, and so even though the shirt might only cost them $2, and if you double it, it's $4. They have to get $5 because they got, you know, 15 restrooms where they used to have one. And I'm not to saying you shouldn't have a restroom, but well, I'll finish this after the break. SP Futures up 550, NASDAQ Futures up 1475. I'm Tom Howell. He's Kevin O'Neill. She's Jay-Z on the board. Be right back.
Founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Jay-Z on the board. Kevin, we'll finish the story a little bit, but it's, as you know, it's even Jay-Z, and she's not here that often. This is one of my root, basically, bitches about where the economy is going. I mean, it's easy in the retail space. That's why they call it the wheel of retailing, to open up a shirt shop down the block from some other guy who you think is overpriced, and then you can undercut him. Same way in the saloon business. If somebody's charging $8 a beer down the block, and you sit there and go, but everything is getting very sticky, Kevin. When you get a Northwestern or University of Chicago or somebody that is used to charging, say, $5,000 for an MRI or X for a delivery, all of a sudden you look at these places and you look at the new hospitals and you say, wow, this waiting room looks like something in the Taj Mahal. And by the way, it looks to me like only 40% of the square feet are devoted to medical. There's all these hallways. There's all these offices. Look at how much these administrative people make. I don't know that you can come back from that in these essentially government-dominated industries. I mean, you certainly can't with Commonwealth Edison. I won't say can't. We've never been able to. I mean, I think Northwestern actually thinks the cost of an MRI really is $5,000. If you divide the amount of MRIs, and I'll bet they don't. But now you and I can envision another world where there's a building for MRIs, and there's a couple of machines. And oh, by the way, if you want to go on, if you're a business guy who wants to go on a Saturday morning where it's convenient as hell, maybe it's $900. And if you can get there at 2 a.m. on Sunday with the same qualified people, maybe it's $450 or something. The object is to run this thing 24/7. Not whenever you feel like it, because then you're going to, you know, depreciate the machine a lot quicker. I mean, there's no.
But let's put it this way, in the lesser model, that which would be the current model, by the way. But if that's subsidized and you have a guaranteed profit, well, yeah, why would you switch? It's too intractable.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You actually get to the point where you think, as a hospital administrator, you're worth $2 million a year. Duh. I mean, and maybe you are. And there are people. Jay-Z, you took that accounting class last year, didn't you? Or economics class?
Yeah.
What do you call what's the term for somebody who's so valuable that you almost can't pay him? There's no amount of money you can pay him.
I don't know.
That term is Kevin.
it's called pure economic rent.
I didn't know that.
I mean, you can't.
I was thinking of something, but it wasn't that.
You can't give Jonas Salk a salary that makes it worth it for the guy, right, Kevin? You probably couldn't have paid Roosevelt enough. I mean, you probably couldn't have paid Bill Gates enough, you know, or the guy Steve Jobs. I mean, there's no number, right, or Edison or somebody, but you can count on probably two hands those people. Right, I mean that you George Washington. I mean, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be here. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? Give the guy $100,000 a year bonus, but these people get to the point where, I mean, look at the salaries. I mean, Commonwealth Edison, if they would justify doubling your bill, they just double their salary. Look how much it costs to deliver your electricity. What do you mean? It has nothing to do with my electricity. It's your new car. You know what I'm saying? I mean, but every time government gets involved in an area. That's what happens, doesn't it? It seems
it is exactly what happens.
But how do you
government is inefficient with little fits of corruption mixed in?
But all right, so
and big fits of corruption too.
Can you think of at any time when they were able to? I can think of one when they could back off from that and somehow retrace those steps.
What's your one?
When you and I were in college, somehow or another, and this is going to sound weird, some combination of some people in Congress, maybe because a lot of them were from academia, and some people in academia got basically a hair up their ass and changed a lot of things. The Chicago Board Options Exchange was a huge difference in competitive market making from the New York Stock Exchange with the one specialist monopoly. There was a massive difference. When they deregulated airlines, there all of a sudden, there had not been one new airline since this, was it the Civil Air and Air Export, CAB determined the other, FAA determines all the rules for, you know, safety and all that stuff, but the CAB was the outfit that allowed essentially airlines to enter the business. And because of the intense lobbying that these people can do, there was not one new airline from the day the CAB was formed, and I'm going to say 34, 35, until what, 1977? And the business grew by a factor of what, 20,000 or something? But in their mind, no, we can handle it. We can handle it. Sort of like the CBOE got to be, where when I started, there were 1,000 members for 125 stocks. When I left, there was the same 1,000 members for probably 2,000 stocks. No, we don't need any more guys in this pit. The five of us can handle it. Okay. When you start referring to the five people that are supposed to be contributing as us, you know you got a problem or competing, right? It became way less competitive. You at least would think that with every new stock, you would add like one guy or something. They wouldn't even do that. So I'm going to say there was a time when the airlines were deregulated and so were the trucking companies, as you recall. And other than that, We saw, actually sort of the same time, we saw Illinois or the AT&T broken up. So there was a time in the early to mid-70s where all that happened. It's the only time in our lifetime, or I can even read back on, that it ever happened.
So we have who, Nixon, who to respect for that?
It had been percolating for a while. An awful lot of people want to know why there was no. And one of the big pushes on the airline was Southwest, which people remember. Jay-Z will not remember. They were a huge airline only in the state of Texas. You could form an airline within the state, but if it went over the state, you had to be federally chartered.
It was interstate commerce.
Yeah,
a different angle.
But Texas obviously is big enough, had enough cities to where they.
Yeah, and you know what they tell you now if you tried to do that? They tell you it's still interstate commerce because people will use that as a connecting
flight. Right. Oh, yeah, probably. But I mean, the trucking companies, there was, the thing of it is, all this was percolating when I was in grad school, Kevin, and everybody knows that I worked for ICX. My brother, good friends, I married one of the daughters of the guy in a corner, and he was the big shot at ICX, great company, if you like trucking companies. A guy who really helped me out with my, well, we both helped each other out, Kevin, because he did not have the education I was getting, so, but I did, he would say, this is where I got my idea about Uber and Lyft. You know, people say they're not a cab, they're this company. And what he said to me, Tom, don't ever forget that running a trucking company is picking up a box at one guy's place and dropping it off at another guy's place on time without wrecking it. Because that's the business. You know, the cab business is paying somebody to put your fanny in their back seat and taking you someplace. That's the cab business. However you get there, whether you jump up and down or whistle for them or have a horse that goes and gets them, that's the cab business, right? I mean, there was a simpleness to the trucking business that I've never forgotten.
Yeah, there's a simplicity actually to almost every business.
But in those days, they had paper. They used to call it paper. I mean, I guess it was a license. But you essentially had licenses to go from places to places. And they had one to go from Chicago to Denver and Phoenix and L.A. But you could not drop something off in Des Moines because ICX did not have the Chicago to Iowa permit. So you couldn't, like, put two trucks together, they call them pups, and drop, like, one off in Des Moines, which would, of course, made sense, right, Kevin? But no, you couldn't do that. So the drivers would essentially drive from Chicago to Denver, drop the truck off, go sleep at the Rolling Wheels Hotel, which was not the best, but they had a good bar. Then the next day, drop in the thing, go right back to Denver. Talk about everybody's behind knowing where every bump on the I-80 was. You know, at least that's why guys like to drive the household goods trucks. At least you go different places. You know, you're moving to Phoenix, and then the person they pick up there is moving to Seattle, but these guys, it was the same thing. Anyway, but I mean, so there was a time, but I don't see any shred of that percolating now, do you? I mean, you see, all I do is see every day, every week, there's a hospital combining or closing or, I mean, it's going the wrong way still, in my mind. Universities, there's no new ones. I mean,
yeah, in many ways, yes, we're allowing competition to get killed,
and there are the places that are percolating.
That's not healthy, and you know I can understand that there's going to be at times tightening and loosening of how we deal with those and how we deal with what we would consider a monopoly or something resembling it, but we've gone off the deep end on that.
Well,
we've done it in healthcare and pharmaceuticals and all kinds of things where we've just allowed industries to over-consolidate. Now, the good news is that little things do flare up.
Yep.
It just depends on how regulated they are as to whether they come back. There's nothing that stops people from forming banks, so you get areas like where I live where there are several really good credit unions.
Oh, yeah.
And a couple of really strong.
All right, Kevin, you got to hold that thought. I got to joust with Russell the next half hour, bud. Thank you very much. Good stuff as usual. Have a nice weekend. It's a nice day today. S&P futures up 6:50. NASDAQ futures up 17. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now! Right
here, right now, right now. Well, I'm up at Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Jay-Z. On the board, SP Futures up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 1575. So we're, I don't think we're going to fade away here today because it'll be a summer Friday. I mean, it's nice weather. I think we're going to doze off as the day wears on, which is fine. It's been a good week, I think, for a lot of people. I know my clients are happy. We got the GDX over 26, but I never thought I'd see that. We've got some of the oil companies have come back some. So I think it's been, you know, unless you were in some individual stocks that maybe you haven't done so hot, by and large, the buy and hold is still there. You know, whether or not You should be starting to get nervous about that. I mean, who the hell knows? I'm always nervous. But then again, that's what they pay me for, is to be nervous, so my clients don't have to be nervous on their own. And Jay-Z, what'd you think of the conversation with Kevin regarding, you know, just the price of some of this stuff? Okay, well, when you're done answering the phone, it's probably going to be Russell. We will talk. Like I said, a lot of the stuff is moving up. We have, you know, the idea that we're going to go from, hey, Russell, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. You just let Jay-Z off the hook. I was going to ask her some huge esoteric economic question.
Oh, no. Don't do that to her.
But she's all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning. She's fine. So some days a little, you know, she's a little slow, but not today. Today she's, I put this on a scale of 1 to 10. This is about a 9 for you this morning, isn't it, Jay-Z?
Yeah, I'm still celebrating because I turned 21.
She turned 21 last week.
Oh, did she? I was getting ready to say pick on somebody your own size, but she's there now.
Yeah, she's, you don't have to worry about her being able to take care of herself. She's fine. We go over with us some night to series when she's working, and, let's just say she's the queen of the place.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, just, you might not ever get a drink out of her, but she's the queen of the place, you know, that type of thing. But anyway, Russell, we're talking with Kevin about, when you see things. I mean, I don't know if it is even still a concept, the wheel of retailing.
I've never heard of the wheel of retailing.
Boy, I am getting so old, it's scary.
You know, I make you mad, and I only use the machine at McDonald's, and I only buy things from Amazon now.
Well, the wheel of retailing was an old concept, basically said, uh-huh. I'm going to go over this again, but as a company started as like a discount place. Then they would add features, add this, add that, as their clients really wanted them. And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, somebody would say, wow, that shirt those guys used to charge $4 for, they're up to $5 because look how nice their place is. If we build some crappy place, we can charge $4, and somebody always undercuts you. It's called the wheel, where somebody starts out at the discount end, and all of a sudden they're Marshall Fields, where you bring stuff back, and the place is gorgeous, and then all of a sudden uh-huh. then there's discount people, and then they don't become discount people anymore, and somebody comes under those. That's what that concept was. And Kevin and I were talking about is once you seem like government gets involved, be it education or medical or electricity, or there's no way that happens. And it seems to me that less and less businesses have people capable of getting in below the guy who's there and saying, let's cheaper. Basically, it's left to service business, you know, bars and restaurants. I guess you can still always open a bar and a restaurant if you want to. And not a whole hell of a lot of what else. I mean, you actually can get in the bank business fairly easily in some states, like Illinois. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna, and our point was is that you end up to where these companies, these industries get so fat that they actually think the costs are what the costs are. I mean, Camel's Edison, I'm sure if you ask them, they think they're giving you a deal on your electric bill. Yet I bet there's places in the country to charge half of what we do, you know, I mean, what they do. If uh-huh. They're not going to look that way. They're going to say, what do you mean? I only make $4 million a year. I should be making $5 million. You know, I mean, there's no, you know, the hospitals, you're not going to get Northwestern to say, by the way, the MRI really isn't worth $6,000. You know, what do you mean? Look at this place. Look at our overhead. Of course you got to pay $6,000. But the wheel of retail.
We've got, they have a celebrity floor.
Yeah.
You think everybody else probably subsidizes that?
Well, you know, when I was at University of Chicago at the time, and you're going to tell me there's about 100 of them now. They're probably still around 100. But at the time, there was only one graduate school in the country that had an MBA in hospital management, and it was the University of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, there was only one that had an MBA in hotel management. Can you name where it was?
It wasn't Chicago, was it?
No.
What was it?
UNLV.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
And now, of course, I'm sure you could probably name 10 places.
I know Memphis has one, and that's just because Holiday Inn was started in Memphis. So Holiday Inn actually subsidized that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
But they didn't have it when I was there. They added it since I left there.
Okay.
But they even have they have an operating Holiday Inn on campus for people to stay when they're doing things at the school, but beyond that, that's how you learn how to be involved in hospitality management.
Well, cool. Well, you know, we had a a professor, a guy like you, a professor, it was one of these courses you kind of took that was a kind of a practical application. You know, of course, the University of Chicago was so quantitative, they made everybody take like a practical application course, like one of them, like one out of 20. So we had this guy, I forget what it was, Becker, I think was his name, but he was into all kinds of stuff. So it was an, but one of his, he had just gotten a grant from government to try and actually study hospitals and basically how good they were. This is back when regression analysis was just getting started. Now, of course, that's, that's old school now, but, and he was trying to figure out how you could compare hospitals to hospitals. It was very similar to what, it wasn't really a buddy of mine, but I knew him. This guy at Notre Dame, I don't know how much money he ever made on this stuff, Russell. He was like the first guy to computerize back when you had key punch systems. Talk about this. The guy comes to Notre Dame to be a computer major. After his freshman year, they dropped the major. So he, I don't know what he did, but he went to the rest of the classes and he had kind of studied stuff on his own sign. The guy was always walking down to campus with a big load of punch cards. Anyway, he kept at it. And it, when he graduated, I'm thinking he was a year or two older than me, so let's say 72 or 73. He actually sold Hank Stram from the Kansas City Chiefs, paid $20,000 for his program to compare players. And he had a select, he selected maybe 10 variables, where it might have been the 40 run, the weight, and different kinds of stuff where, so if you, you know, one high school guy would say, hey, draft Russell, he's a hell of a halfback, he's fast as all get out. And then somebody, some Jay-Z would call up and say, no, here's my, you know, so my nephew and he's fast. Well, there was at least like 10 things you could say, all right, wait a minute. The guy's at least, now I know he's 6'2". I know he's 210. I know he runs 100 or 60 or 40, whatever it was in those days. At least they were like, they put like 10 things together that sort of everybody has. And he was the first guy to do that. And he got paid like $20,000 a pop by like six teams when he graduated. That was pretty big dough back in, whatever, 1970.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, but this guy was trying to do that with hospitals. And it's so qualitative. You know, it's so qualitative. And you ask somebody about their doctor, everybody's going to say, I got the world's best doctor. But unless you're another doctor or a nurse, you don't know if anybody's any good. When I say anybody's any good, they take your appendix out. Okay. You have no way of knowing if there's somebody, you know, who maybe has spectacular hands, you know, like maybe Jay-Z, when she takes out somebody's appendix, guess what? There's three minor sutures. If I did it, you know, some clumsy-ass guy, your appendix is still out. You're still going to survive, but you got a scar from your ankle to your neck, you know? But you have no way of knowing, you know what I'm saying?
And there might be a wristwatch in there.
Yeah, it could be. What's that ticking sound I hear? You know, hey, we started with 100 sponges. We only got 50. Where do you suppose the other 50 went? But you know what I'm saying is, but anyway, he picked on some, his variables were the most bizarre things. It was poisoning from the cafeteria, after surgery, infection. And one of them was evidently, you can really tell when gallbladders are taken out after they're out. You can like look at them and figure out whether you should have taken them out in the first place very easily. So we picked that because he said like half all gallbladder surgeries when you got it out that there was nothing wrong with it, you know, type of thing. Anyway, he had like five variables, but it was very hard to do. But get a load of this. Guess what? Most hospitals how they figured out their cost per night.
How do they figure out their cost per night?
Well, tell me. You're the professor.
I assume they figured out how they would be able to keep the place running based on the cost per night.
Bingo.
They would back into it.
They would say, how much did we spend all year? $80 million.
What percentage didn't we not collect on?
No, they would just say, how many patient nights did we have? 800. Okay, I guess it's 100,000 a night. I mean, whatever. You know, yeah. I mean, that was the number. There was nothing that said, well, wait a minute. We got a room, all right? We got one night nurse or two night nurses for five rooms. That costs us X. The electricity, here's the rent on that room. Let's say it's like a hotel room, but by the way, you got to add some machines. Let's say our variable cost is, you know, $100 a night if you pay for the nurse and that type of thing. If somebody comes in a room that's vacant, What does it cost us? Do we have to put another nurse on? Maybe. Maybe we got to get somebody for overtime. What about the machines? I mean, what is our, the food obviously is something, something. Somebody's got to clean the room. Somebody's got to clean the, whatever. It was no. They had everything in there, including like the president's salary, and say, well, wait a minute. This is what we spent this year. There's so many people we had. And when Ronald Reagan, in his administration, they said, you know, you don't need people in 5 days for, a baby born, a new baby. We can do that. We can have somebody out in four. Well, now you're out in what, like two? But so
yeah, basically.
So all they really did in those wards was have empty beds, and you didn't get anywhere. So you had 20% of your beds empty. But all it did was raise the price of the other ones 20%, because you had some empty. So I mean, as long as you look at this stuff ignorantly, you know, in my mind, how government looks at it, well, yeah, it should cost $100,000 a year for an education at California schools, which if you take the entire amount of money they spend and divide it by the amount of students they have, that's what it costs, $100,000 a student a year. What the hell, Kevin? Or Kevin Russell? I mean, what kind of number is that?
You know, that explains why the tuitions have gone up so
well, sure,
much.
Sure, sure.
Because they're just backing into it, and then they'll just figure out how to cover it. You know where the cost of college has come from, where the increased cost of college has come from? It's the support staff.
Well, the overhead, lack of a better. So I use that factor.
And now I would say that, one of the great things about the job that I had at SIBO was I got to visit a lot of universities. And, you know, they're trying to sell the places to people. So that you have every amenity known to man. Have you seen when's the last time you were down at Notre Dame?
It was not that long ago, I wanted to get your take, because that's what Kevin and I were talking about. When you decide that the competition now is in, you know, let's say the dorm we stayed in was a piece of crap, basically.
I think the dorm still, it's really funny. When I did the tour with my kid, even though she's only going to be a freshman in high school. But they didn't show us a dorm room. They showed us that really kick-ass new student center that they just
created. Oh, yeah,
completed.
Yeah.
But now that you know, it's funny. They showed us the dorms from the outside.
Oh, yeah. they're still sort of the same.
Yeah,
I mean, you're still going down.
Yeah, I don't think they've changed much because they look kind of old from the outside.
You're still going down the hall to the bathroom, that type of thing. What I'm saying is, at some point, but now the chow is light years compared to
chicken
or mystery.
They talked about that. Actually, we got a ticket. We didn't have time, but we got a little ticket to go eat there.
I'll tell you what.
Sell us on that for sure.
You could have gone to the Mexican bar. You could have gone to the salad bar. You could have gone to the Asian bar. I mean, it's literally like going to a food court.
Yeah.
Where we had our food court.
I mean, my school, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma State actually has the, and we don't want the University of Texas to know this, but the student center at Oklahoma State is the largest one in the world. It takes up like almost four city blocks. And it's like a mall without the stores.
So that's where you have like your workout facilities and all that stuff?
Oh yeah. And they just have like random dogs on campus that if you're a dog person, you can go pet a dog for a while.
It's not a bad idea.
We have that at Loyola too. They don't know what to do during the summer.
What I'm saying is how do you back off to get back to my wheel of retail and kind of, how do you back off? How do you and I and Kevin say, guess what? We're just going to provide education. We're going to have some really good profs. We're going to buy some building here.
Nobody will go there. You got to have a sports team and a social life and all that kind of stuff.
Well, which
drives me actually bonkers. My oldest said she learned about Ryerson in Canada, and I was like, that's great. Let's go to a Canadian school.
Well, but I guess
it's cheaper and it's a great school and. They don't have all that stuff.
You're
learn stuff.
But now that we're talking about 70 grand's a number, now you get people like Bernie Sanders saying, well, it should be free. And my point is, if it was 5 grand or 10, it doesn't matter who pays for it. The people there can pay for it. They can get a loan on their own.
Yeah.
But how do you come back? How does somebody have
if it becomes free, you're going to lose all that stuff.
Well, it's never free. It's flipping the cost onto somebody else.
Okay, let's say if it's free to the government, you know what? Okay, if the government starts paying for it, and all the public colleges suddenly become, you know, free, for lack of a better word, free tuition. How's that? We'll call it free tuition.
Well, California used to be free, right?
You're gonna have to fire, right? The support staffs have basically gone from one person for each teacher to 3-to-1. That's kind of where we've gone nationally. You're gonna go right back to 1-to-1 or maybe even, 1 for every 2 professors.
Why do you think like that? When's the last time that why do you think that? When's the last time the government ever paid for anything? You know what it is in
why do I think that?
Yeah.
Because they're just not going to be able to maintain the level of what we have right now.
I keep using this factory term. What do you suppose the overhead in indirect people, again, this is a terminology from 100 years ago. Huh? What do you think the indirect people versus direct people at the University of California system is? Direct people meaning professors, people that teach versus people who don't.
Is it about 5-to-1?
Try 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn. I mean, that's 3-to-1 is like a national average, and that's interesting because the University of California system is very unique in its own right. You basically test into the system, and then they place you at one of the schools.
Right.
So it's probably closer to what Bernie would like nationally than most state university systems.
Well, you know, who's getting like that is Ohio.
Are they really?
If you apply for Ohio State, which is my mother's cousins used to say, if you could walk across campus while chewing gum without hiccuping, you were in.
Well, that's how you get 70,000 students.
Well, but everybody from Ohio basically could get in. Well, now if you take the test for there, they're going to say, well, you're not going to be at Ohio State Columbus the first year. You're going to be Ohio University North or some damn place for your first year or two, and maybe you can transfer back. But I don't know how you come back from this, where you get, you know, some knucklehead like me saying, you know what, here's a professor. The guy makes 100, say. I mean, I don't know what they make, but all in, say 100. We can do the math. There's 25 people in class. Well, guess what? If he teaches one class, it's $4,000, right? But he doesn't teach one. He teaches 5 over the course of the year. So let's say that actually his cost per student is $500. That's where you're starting with, right? Now, of course, you got to have a building. You got to heat it. You know, you need something more than a blackboard these days. Let's say there's another, you know, whatever. There's another X on that, $1,000, $1,500, and you know, all the other stuff, the ancillary stuff, the mental health clinic, the dorm, all that stuff. None of that is really needed. I mean, when I say needed, yes, it's needed if it's a community, but it's not needed for quote education.
No.
So, but now it's sticky. You're not going to get the Notre Dame alumni. You're not going to get the accreditation. If you and I did that on the South Side and, you know, bought Tilden Tech, say, remodeled the place and made it into a university, how long would it take us to get accredited? And the people fighting against this would be the other universities.
Oh, gosh. It would take easily a decade.
Yeah, and the people fighting against us would be Illinois. So they'd be using state money to fight against somebody. It's like Commonwealth Edison using your money to fight against the People's Energy Group.
Well, do you know how the accreditation works?
Actually, I don't. Enlighten us, please.
I got I know because it seems like conveniently I would be doing guest lectures at universities when they were up for accreditation, and basically it's professors from other accredited schools.
Okay, well that's who does it. That's well,
or that's a big part of it. Like a group of like 5 professors from other schools will come through, do a tour, ask some questions, make sure you're outreaching to the professional community. I've actually been yanked more than once, been yanked out of speaking to students and introduced to the visiting the people from the other university that are coming to check out to make sure they're doing everything to maintain their accreditation.
Well,
I've seen that process up close.
The dear departed Milton Friedman, who I talk about, well, you can tell the guy read a lot of his stuff, so So my favorite professor has been dead for 20 years. Well, actually, he wasn't my favorite. George Stigler was. But he would always talk about two subjects as economic examples of stuff that doesn't work. One was the cab companies with the city regulating the amount of cabs. The other was, for years and years, who do you suppose regulated the amount of medical schools?
The other medical schools?
No, the doctors, the AMA.
Same
thing.
The people that had a vested interest in the other medical
schools. Yeah, they had a vested interest in keeping the number slightly lower than maybe it ought to be, because if you had more doctors, the price would have gone down. Of course, Milton Friedman never anticipated that you would end up having that the doctor wouldn't be anywhere near the highest paid person in the chain. Because in those days, the highest paid person at a hospital was a doctor. Now it's not even close to that, I don't think. I guess the thing with Kevin is, how do you come back from that? And what is the number? I mean, my Catholic grammar school, whatever, of course they had nuns, and it was a whole different economic dynamic, because you had nuns, but you also had lay teachers that, basically had, well, some of them didn't because they were older, but had kids in the school. So a lot of them would walk the two blocks home with their kids, have lunch, and come back. So you're talking about, they weren't paid very much, but you also didn't need a second car. You know, you didn't need a babysitter because you were with the kids basically in the same building.
Right.
So, I mean, it was the economic, and then you had the nuns. Okay, but the bottom line was, We had four classes per grade in this Irish area, which people at least knew how to do one thing, make kids. You had four classes per grade, plus two kindergartens. So we're talking 34 classes, correct?
Yeah.
So you had 34 teachers. They didn't have any subs. So if somebody was sick, the principal would teach for the day. So
somebody
you didn't get a break when your teacher was sick and you got the principal up there. It was worse, right? So they had a music teacher. They had two janitors. They didn't have a basketball coach because the priest was a basketball coach. One of the priests. They only had three priests. So the overhead rate was what? Two janitors and a music teacher, the principal, and she had one assistant. So it's five people indirect for 34 direct.
Yeah.
Versus 34 direct and 340 other people like you have in California.
Yeah.
Do you think it costs a little more?
No, it's the way the higher education system has gotten run it's gotten out of control.
I mean, yeah, so
as far, I mean, the they're not run like businesses anymore. And it really does go back to about 10 years ago. The private sector was not involved in the student loan business anymore, because of that, anybody can go anywhere and eventually pay it back or maybe not pay it back.
Why do you
what's ended up happening is the price has gotten jacked. I was in a situation where I couldn't get student loans, but I also could barely afford to pay for college, so I had to work two jobs and go to college. In this day and age, they give a loan to anybody, so I could probably have I probably could have gotten a loan.
Now, you couldn't afford a car, so you walked to work uphill both ways against the wind.
No, it wasn't that bad, but it's just because of my family had declared bankruptcy shortly before I went to college because of some things that happened. And
I
was not able to get a student loan. That's why I ended up going to University of Memphis. The tuition was under $1,000 a semester at the time.
Well, how do we get from?
I basically worked all summer to pay to go to school.
Well, can you imagine?
Yeah. And then
by the way, it's pretty damn impressive. By the way,
I couldn't do it in this day and age.
No. I mean, you can't even come close. I actually could have damn near paid for my education. I absolutely could at the University of Chicago. It was 30.
Yeah.
You know, it's $3,500 a year there. Can you imagine that? Officially now, Russell, one class at University of Chicago costs more than my entire tuition.
Oh, it's the same thing at University of Memphis. It's gone up that much.
Can you hang a little bit after the break, or you got a day?
Oh, yeah, I'm happy to.
Okay, sure. I don't know if John's calling in right on time or whatever. But, the idea, I mean, I could make $1,000 during the summer. So I pay that. I mean, and my room and board was $1,000. What is it now, 10? Of course, how many, Jay-Z, how many different when you have some kind of beef and gravy four nights a week, how many different names can you put on it? It was Salisbury steak one night, something else the next night. So finally we just said, would they have chicken and mystery? It was mystery meat. We didn't know what it was. But put gravy on anything, it wasn't so bad, Russell. Some mashed potatoes, you're good to go, especially at an Irish school. S&P futures up 750 now, Dow futures up 88, and we got the NASDAQ futures up 21. Looks like a slow but positive day here. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now. Right
now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. She's Jay-Z on the board. We have Sir Russell Rhodes. Jessica Zaluski, S&P futures up $6. NASDAQ futures up 1350. We got the Dow is up 88. This is, I'm listening, trying to multitask here, listening to this Peter Navarro, and I'm cringing. Anyway, oil up 11 cents. I'm getting Russell all miffed now because I'm going to take a shot at Peter Navarro. DAX down 87 cents. I'm going to call that one flat. FTSE up 10 bucks, 0.1%. CAC around up 21.4%. I'm saying everybody's heading to the coast in Europe right about now. Over in Asia, almost the same way. Nikkei up a whole 42 points, 20.2%. Shanghai up 12.4%. Hang Seng up 39. That's almost flat, say 0.1%. Oil up 11 cents. West Texas up 32 cents. Brent. That spread is $6.55, which every time it's got this low, it's been a buy. Of course, I wouldn't advise buying it there. Plus, it would be very hard to do that since it's two different positions, two different stuff. But I watch it just for laughs. I don't know why. Gold is up a dollar now. It was up more, but 1407. Silver down 4 cents, 1510. Jay-Z, what do you got for traffic, weather, sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. Chicago is sunny today with a high of 84, low of 65. Phoenix is cloudy with a high of 111 and low of 88. In baseball, the Cubs, Sox, and Diamondbacks were off. And in traffic, there's one accident on Edens going west just before Devon. Expect about 10 to 15 minutes delays. Nothing else. Back to you.
In the middle of my story here, Russell, I'm going to... it sort of is the same thing. The You know what? The balls of these people. Stones of these people. Peter Navarro comes out and says, don't believe anything you read in the China or U.S. press. Calls Wall Street Journal stories, crummy or whatever. Garbage. Actually, garbage. Hey, John, how are you?
Good morning. Doing good.
Calls Wall Street Journal stories garbage. But trust me, I'm in the inner room. I'm much smarter than you. Not only are we going to take care of you in the way you should need to be taken care of, but all these other people whose job it is to kind of let you know what's going on in the world, don't pay any attention to them. They're all idiots. Has anybody been more, and I know you're more conservative than I, has anybody been more disingenuous about these Chinese talks for the last friggin' year than the people in the White House? Just saying. Just asking. You can see, feel free to say no. They've been terrific. Russell? John?
I thought you were asking John.
Well, you were hoping I was asking. No, I'm asking you. Then I'm going
to
ask
John. Thought you were asking John. When somebody else comes along, I start deferring.
Don't worry, he'll get his chance.
Well, I don't think they're being disingenuous about this. I think they're trying to win something here and do something that nobody else has stepped up and done in a long, long time.
I'm not talking about...
Which is pushed back on them.
I'm not talking about the goal. I'm talking about the no talks in the morning, Larry Kudlow running out, talks in the afternoon, market-moving events on something that hasn't moved at all in a year. How many market-moving announcements have come from the White House, not the Wall Street Journal, and something that's...
Well, for the life of me, I can't figure out. I know we got some news overnight that bumped the S&P up a little bit. If we're at all-time highs, doesn't that mean the market really shouldn't even be caring about the trade talks or that they've already discounted that it's going to get done?
I'm not exactly sure on that because...
Yeah, I'm not either. That's one of those questions for discussion.
Well, we'll ask John. Is it just one more... It probably has something to do a lot of with the market with what I was talking to Kevin about earlier. And it has to do with, the capital asset pricing model. How do you... When you start going back down for a while... And John, you know this, obviously, member of PTI.
Right.
That the president of PTI, Dan, if John wanted to go... To get, not that John doesn't do it himself, but Dan is the one who goes to the Treasury and gets people. Matter of fact, I'm going to look right now. The goes to the Treasury and he gets if somebody wanted to do a T-bill for a while with the yield curve, the way it was kind of messed up there, Russell, we were actually able to get, you get a couple for you, I think, John, where we've got like, we almost got like 2.5% for 6 months, right? Or 2.47 or something. Well, so okay, it was actually becoming a little bit of a, I'll use the term competitor to stocks, Russell. I mean, not severe one, but I mean, there are people who had, there's people here, they got, several million-dollar account where somebody's going to say, I don't need all several million in the market. Why don't you put, half a million at 2.5% for 6 months? I mean, but now it's back down to, You know, I'm going to say we're what, 2.1, Jan, maybe at most 2.0.
Right, for a little, right, yeah. For a little while there, it was starting to get lucrative. Like, yeah. And I was seeing it that way too. And then you know, now we've backed off what you know, almost you know, 0.5%, yeah, a little bit more than that.
So, Russell, I mean, you obviously get this as a professor, but you're not doing it day to day like Jan and the rest of us are. I mean, now mm-hmm. we're back to, okay, well, now for that guy's $500,000, and say, I'll keep using big numbers, guy's got a $3 million account. Now, do I turn around and put that in the market in the attempt of getting, you know, a dividend or something, which obviously a lot more risk than a T-bill, on some stock, or what do I do with it? Because now I really can't, well, I can, but I can say to the same guy, hey, Russell, remember how we did that 6 months ago at 2.5? Well, we can do it again, but now it's 1.8. And you might say, yeah, you know, or something along those lines, something you can't spell. And it makes a difference. I mean, this constant propping up of asset prices by feds around the world, and which brings me to another point. I mean, we've got a Fed that has the 2 point where they're supposed to be full employment and inflation. Okay, and I was, Jan, we were talking about this yesterday a little bit. All of a sudden now you've got, you know, are you trying to not have the dollar run up so much? Is that part of this deal? And what do you do if the central banks around the world go negative to the point where those guys are morons, but are they forcing me to become a half moron because I can't be 3.5% here while Germany's minus 0.3? Because that doesn't work. Yeah. Because look what it does to the currencies and everything else. I mean, is it our obligation to follow somebody basically into the sewer, or can we be, no, you guys do what you want, but we're not. Meanwhile, the dollar races to the moon. Our goods are not as competitive vis-a-vis a, I mean, there's more to this than I think either the president or AOC give the Fed credit for. Am I right or not? It's getting pretty complicated for these guys.
Oh yeah, it most definitely is.
And you know, I honestly don't know. I think when you get too far afield, and when you force people to do stuff that no one in his right mind would do. I mean, I've known Jan as a broker, money manager at PTI for a long time, and I know that if your dad gave him $5 million, Russell, the last thing he would do would put it in a 10-year note with negative interest to where your dad's going to get $9,999,000 in 10 years and charge him for it.
That's not even in my wheelhouse.
I'm going to say I don't think Jan would even think of that. I mean,
right.
And yet we have people that, and the only way it gets like that is if the only person I'm going to say stupid enough to make that trade is a government. The reason why you buy a something at zero interest rate is because you think you're Goldman Sachs, and the next day, what's his name, is going to call Paul's buddy, he's going to call up and say, hey, you know that bond that's trading 104? I'll pay 104.5. And you go, yes. I mean, the thought of hanging on the thing, I mean, talk about the greater fool theory. I mean, who would do that? So I think when you get to the edge where I was talking earlier, if interest rates are zero, does that mean a 6 flat that returns 100,000 a year is worth infinite? Or are we so far on the scale that we can't even price things right? Right? I mean, if it's 10%, you know, the place that returns 100 grand a year is worth $1 million, right?
Right.
Well, what if the interest rate is 0.0001? Does that mean it's worth 400 million or 500 million? I mean, that's kind of where we are with the market here, right? At zero interest rate, how do you price an asset?
It's pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, what do you talk about that in class, Russell? What do you? I mean, it's easy.
I do the same thing that I always do. I say we're in an unusual environment. When we get back to a normal environment, here's how it's going to work.
Well, I'm guessing it's somewhere along the line. You tell somebody at 6% interest, this stream of payments is worth $40 million for this company. At 5%, it's worth, you know, 45 or something. Or then when the guy goes, what about zero? What do you say to him?
What?
Yeah. What if the guy says, hey, professor, we're not talking five or six. We're talking, you know, zero.
Oh, how much? Well, they don't know enough to ask that to bring that one up.
You got to get me to one of these classes.
You're more than welcome to come. And
if I lob questions people in like that, are you going to wing me out?
Yeah, you need to just make sure you have a handful of erasers to throw at people when they're texting.
Ah.
Now, but you can't hit them, you just have to scare them.
Now, could you?
Hit them, you're in a lot of trouble.
Could you, for instance?
I just have to, I tell them where we're at, and I explain that, the majority of my career, we've not been in this place, and take it from there. And of course, a lot of the examples in the textbook use a real, you know, use an interest rate that's a little bit higher than where we are right now. That's, I mean, and that's all you can do. Just like, you know, we've talked about inflation a million times on here about how I explain at some point this is going to happen and this is how it's going to work. So hopefully they can retain some of that and have a little bit of an edge on, you know, everybody else.
I have John, I don't know if you were on last week, but I was talking to somebody. We got on the subject of the gas tax, the 19-cent new gas tax here in Illinois. Well, it must be you, Russell, because you were all pissed off about it, as I recall.
I am extremely upset about that.
All right, I have two economic questions for the both of you mavens.
Uh-huh.
I don't usually get a lot of pushback, but I don't know, people either ignore me or like what I, one of the two. But I got serious pushback, and I had guests on twice. One was the guy from the city pension, teacher's pension thing. When I asked him, well, what if there's everybody keeps leaving, is the last man standing got to have enough to pay all the teacher's pension? He didn't like that. I got to say that I got some abuse on that. It was an understatement. And one, I said, I don't know if gold was that good of a long-term investment, even though I have my people a lot of gold in the short term. But this one, I brought up, this is an amazing example for you to use in class, Russell, or John, if you're ever, you know, holding court at the local emporium. I said that because the market for gasoline is actually reasonably competitive. If you look at today's world, it's not as competitive as corn or wheat or anything, but there's still an element of competitive in it, competition mm-hmm. in it, and the demand curve is not totally inelastic, which I didn't go into because I don't think nobody knows what the hell that means. Is not totally inelastic, that you would find that the gas prices would probably not go up the full 19%. They'd probably go up, my guess would be 12%, 13%, 14%, and that the station owner, the oil company, and the refiner all are going to take a minor hit. Well, I have gotten nothing but, Chief, you're out of your mind. And interesting, our guy here over at the series, and you've been there with us, Billy, good friend forever. He used to trade on the floor. He goes, oh, Tommy, you're way off on this one. Because when they raised the booze prices, the booze tax, he goes, in 2 months, it went right up the amount of, it was 50 cents a bottle. He goes, they went up 50 cents. I said, Billy, you gotta understand what the preamble to what I said was, this particular industry is still a little bit competitive, and certainly it's very competitive in the long run. If you look 5 years out and the new cars people can buy and, you know, whatever, the guy who has a Suburban might buy, whatever, and the next time out they get three times the amount. I said, in your industry, like if Russell was doing this, he's gonna say, okay, the booze business in Chicago is essentially a duopoly. There's two distributors.
Yeah.
I mean, there's actually a few little guys, but basically it's Southern Beverage and it's Wirtz. The guy who owns the Hawks and part of the Bulls. So those are the two people. So yeah, if you're dealing with a monopoly or a duopoly, you're going to find that you're going to pay, you probably didn't pay all of it. You probably paid out of the 50 cents a bottle, you're probably paying 48. You know, pretty damn close to the 50. But now in a competitive world, everybody eats part of that. Am I right or not?
I'll jump in there. I think you're right, Tom, and I'll tell you what. Years ago when I was in the ice business, I was driving around with I forget which chain it was, but one of the regional reps for one of these service station chains. And as we're driving around, you know, talking about what we wanted to talk about, we couldn't sit in an office because he's just a nervous bundle of energy. But as we drive by a station, he was seeing the other stations around his station. He called that station, and he changed that by, you know, 4, 5, 6 cents, whatever he wanted to do, just at the drop of a dime, just to be more competitive with the ones that were across the street or down the block from him.
I would agree. Now, next question to you, mavens. Does that 19 cents, does that get in the CPI? Easily, quickly, ever?
Ex-food and energy, man.
Well, no, I mean, just in general.
No, it probably does not.
I would say lost in the shuffle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so again, it's our, you know, we need to, David Adelman actually spent a week one time digging through, like an alternative, like a David-only CPI, and he dug out all the stuff that he spends money on a week, is his mortgage, his insurance, medical and other, car stuff, gas, and he thought that his inflation over the last 3 years was an easy 7%. If you look at fees, taxes, tolls, those kinds of things. And I don't know if any of that stuff gets in there, does it? Well, I mean, some of the stuff does, but I mean, you're governing with bad numbers. I mean, I went to Indiana a long time, Russell. The fiasco, John, I'll explain it to you one day over beer, because it's interesting about building the place, having bonds that they never paid interest ever, the Chicago Skyway, and they sold it to somebody, and it went from like $1.50 to $3.50, and now it's gone from $4 to $4.50 to I think it was $5.30 last week, so it's up 20% in the last 2 years. I mean, does that stuff go anywhere? And we're talking now, if a guy goes back and forth from Indiana and uses it, he's up to like $260 a month. What the hell, over?
Yeah,
that's a real number.
That's when you take the train.
Well, okay. I mean, you're right.
If you can, you know. I know. That's become that. Oh well. You just don't even want to try to drive anywhere anymore.
Well, you're a New York dude all the time now. What is if you're just a big dummy that doesn't have the card, the easy card for the Triborough Bridge? How much is that now?
It's around $5 or so.
What's the one that's like 25? If you're from
outside,
to get
in and out of Manhattan, there's one freeway in and out. I can't remember which
I think it's the George Washington Bridge. The only freeway in, right?
Yeah, I think you can slip over to Brooklyn and then slip into Manhattan, and that's a way to do it as well.
Brooklyn Bridge is free.
Yeah,
but I thought one of the bridges was like $20 if you didn't have the card.
I'll look up and pay more attention. But I haven't seen it that high.
Okay, well, these economic principles, if you don't define it right, I don't think people even. I mean, name me, both of you guys, name me five industries that you think are still competitive. And by any kind of...
yeah, I'd have to think on that one.
That's tough.
Well, I'm going to say the grain still are. Probably local restaurants and bars still are, right? I mean, I'd say a lot of food stores are. I mean, there's some. I mean...
Well, I would say your restaurants, though, Tom, get pushed out by these, conglomerates.
Yep.
So, I mean, we still have, like here, we still have some good regional ones, but it's hard when, they compete against some of these national chains, that put out the coupons and so on and so forth. I like to go to, my little local, sushi place or something like that, but there's so many choices for other people with these, like I said, coupons and things like that, to these national ones.
Well, running a restaurant is pretty hard business. I mean, it's
exactly.
What are we going to do for breakfast in Chicago, Russell, when all these old Greek guys die?
We're going to be stuck at McDonald's ordering off the kiosk.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's not funny. I mean, most of them. I mean, am I right? They're all owned by Greek people, most of them, and they absolutely work. They work their fanny off. It's got to be a 70-hour week for those guys.
Well, as an example, my favorite watering hole for, watching the football games over the last decade or so closed a couple months ago. He couldn't make it, which is a shame. Little neighborhood place, where we'd go watch, me and the wife would go watch the football games on Sunday.
I'm going to guess, Jan, that he didn't own the building.
Oh, no, absolutely not. You're correct.
Because I know a few people in my neighborhood that have gone on to do well after a lot of years. And never really made a dime until they owned the building, because the guy who owned the place basically said how much you make last year, and that's what the rent went up. And now the city of Chicago is burying people on taxes.
Right.
So you're talking about taxes. You're talking about electric bills. You're talking about all that kind of stuff. It has really nothing to do with the food or booze you're drinking.
Right.
I mean, it's almost at a point, Russell, where I talk to restaurant people a lot. I talk to everybody. Imagine that. And it's almost to the point where if you want to have dinner, you and your wife, walk out, just give the guy $100, put your fanny in the seat, and you know what? You can eat and drink all night. It has nothing to do with the pasta you're getting or the drink you're getting. It has to do with that he needs $50 a chair or $40 a chair to make money, and it almost doesn't matter unless you're getting a, you know, a 20 ounce prime steak. He's willing to feed you anything, basically. And I don't know if it ever always was like that, but it clearly is like that now.
There's a huge disappointment because we don't drink when we go out to eat.
Oh, gotcha.
And they do not like us. Actually, the person I eat out with the most is standing across from me laughing and smiling right now.
Well, I mean,
because you can just see the disappointment on their face when we'll just have a couple of Diet Coke.
Well, yeah, my buddy, Butcher Al, has a place, and he tells me, I won't go into last names or anything, nice place, little Italian place, and he says if there's one bottle of wine, one drink, one bottle of wine, two appetizers, I break even. If there's an extra drink, I make money. If there's dessert, I make money. Not because I don't make money on everything I give them on a variable cost basis. You look now, when I was at Pullman, a couple of guys left there and went to the restaurant supply business. And in those days, the thing you ate, like if you went in and had a steak for $20, the steak should cost the place $8, and the potato and the salad and the profit and all the rest of the crap was the other 12. Now I'm going to say, so it was basically 2.5 to 1. Okay, maybe not even, maybe more like 2.25 to 1. Now I'm going to say virtually every place you go, whatever you order is 5 to 1. And it's still not enough. I mean, a glass of wine is going to be $8 anywhere you go for something that isn't total swill, but it's still, you can buy a 90-score bottle of wine for $12. So you get five glasses out of a bottle, all right? So 5 times 8 is 40. We're talking, what are we talking? 3.5, 4 to 1, at least. Where I'm thinking it used to be 3 to 1 or 2.5. And still, these guys can't make money unless they get enough people in there because the real cost now has nothing to do with the food. It has to do with the lease, has to do with the taxes, has to do with all other stuff.
The other part of that too, Tom, is I'm seeing more and more as the wife and I go out that of these takeout places, this Grubhub and all these things. I see a line of those people waiting to pick stuff up. So with what you're saying there, obviously there's no adult beverages going out the door. I mean, at least in Arizona they can't do that, can't deliver that kind of thing. So really all they're getting is that plate of sushi or whatever it is.
Well, but if you can have that kind of volume, one of the best Chinese places in town is right by me. She's been in the business 20 some years, maybe more. She closed the restaurant piece and just does the carry out.
Right.
It's not even worth it.
It's a balance. Right. Yeah. It's a balance. Exactly.
I mean, you can carry something out the front door if you got, four items or $10 to throw. It's $40. It's better than having to have somebody sit there for 2 hours. $40.
Yep.
So Russell, what are you, both you guys, market appears, like we're going to be okay up until the Fed meeting. They're going to cut a quarter point. Then what? Are we anticipating, are we going another year up on the next quarter point? Are people going to say that's it and all the news is out and here we are?
The market's pricing in another one at the next meeting right now.
Would you?
I don't know. I don't agree with that, but that's what when I looked at the CME FedWatch tool yesterday, they're giving about a 60% chance that we get a cut. I guess September is the following meeting.
Right. I don't think there is an August one.
If you get language or whatever that backs off from getting a cut at the 6 weeks later, that could be pretty bad for the markets.
Okay.
I agree. That was what I was going to say.
Any chance?
Sorry, man. I beat you to it.
Any
no, that's all right. But I totally agree with you there.
Any chance of a half a point this month? I'm saying no. What do you guys think?
No,
I say a quarter.
I do too. All right, guys. Thank you very much. S&P futures up 575. NASDAQ futures up 1275. Be back Monday. Stocks and Jacks.
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.